Iran's Deputy Foreign Minister Ali Bagheri Khani tells Press TV that Tehran welcomes negotiations that would lead to the removal of unlawful sanctions against the Islamic Republic. Palestinian Liberation Organization condemns an Israeli plan to expand settlements in the West Bank, calling it an embodiment of the regime's hostility. Also in the headlines, Britain dismisses as disappointing and disproportionate France's threats of reprisals over restrictions on access for its fishing boats to UK waters. We're starting right here in Iran, where the country's deputy foreign minister has told Press TV that the removal of sanctions will be the main focus of the upcoming talks with the parties to the 2015 nuclear deal.
The point which was highlighted during the talks with the coordinator of the JCPOA Joint Commission, Enrique Mora, is that Tehran pursues talks which would produce practical results. The Islamic Republic of Iran does not seek negotiations that would only result in a deal on the paper. The main topic of any talks would be the removal of illegal sanctions which have been imposed on the Islamic Republic over the past years, especially those imposed by former U.S. President Donald Trump under his so-called maximum pressure campaign after leaving the Iran nuclear deal.
Bagheri Khani says Iran has a strong logic based on which it has entered negotiations. The top Iranian negotiator says the Islamic Republic has been committed to the nuclear deal and is standing by the negotiating table. He believes some parties are away from the table either by violating the agreement or failing to live up to their obligations. The talks are expected to resume in late November. Iran and the remaining signatories to the pact have conducted six rounds of negotiations in Vienna with the aim of removing anti-Iran sanctions. Political commentator Sarah Flanders says Iran has the right to demand guarantees that the other parties to the 2015 nuclear deal will not violate an agreement, an international agreement that is, again.
Iran has every right to demand some kind of guarantees. In 2015, they signed this joint comprehensive plan of action with China, France, Germany, Russia, the UK, and the US. And it was then signed by the UN Security Council, verified by the IAEA. After all of this, the US withdrew unilaterally in May 2018 and reimposed sanctions on Iran. Complete violation of a signed international treaty. And the other signers, the other parties of this treaty, simply sat back and respected the U.S. sanctions, not their agreement with Iran. And it seems Iran is rightfully saying, well, they'll have a discussion, but they want guarantees that they're countries will abide by the very agreements and treaties that they sign and end the sanctions on Iran. So far, the U.S., the first step, if they want to come back into any kind of discussion, would be to end the sanctions on Iran. And this is what they're not doing.
And Iran has criticized the International Atomic Energy Agency for publishing detailed technical information about its nuclear program. A spokesman for the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran, Behrouz Kamalbandi, says such a move runs contrary to the privacy articles of the IAEA statute. Kamalbandi says Iran is the only country that the agency publishes its sensitive information. He argues that such details are being used to cast doubt on Iran's nuclear activities. The Iranian official has called on the nuclear watchdog to stop the practice, adding that Tehran will take appropriate measures if the agency refuses to do so. Syria's ambassador to the United Nations has called for the withdrawal of U.S. and Turkish forces from his country, saying their presence is illegal.
Syria renews its demand to end the illegal presence of American and Turkish forces on our territory and to stop their aggressive practices and their plundering of the country's economic resources and the country's wealth.
Sabah has told a UN Security Council meeting that Turkish forces and the militant groups backed by Ankara are obstructing humanitarian access from inside Syria. The envoy also says some Western governments are not living up to their commitments to improve the humanitarian crisis in Syria. Addressing the same meeting, Iran's UN ambassador has condemned the Israeli occupation of Syria's Golan Heights.
The Security Council must live up to its responsibility and compel the Israeli regime to end the occupation of the Syrian Golan and also stop immediately its aggressions against Syria. Aggressions and destabilizing measures of the Israeli regime constitute flagrant violations of international law and continue to threaten regional and international peace and security. We condemn in the strongest terms this criminal act as well as all violations of the sovereignty and territorial integrity of Syria by the Israeli regime and reaffirm Syria's inherent right to self-defense and to respond at a time and place of its choosing.
Takhtar Avanchi has also denounced a recent terrorist attack in the Syrian capital Damascus that left 14 people dead. He says the bombing indicates that the fight against terrorist groups in Syria must continue unabated. The Iranian ambassador has further called for the removal of U.S. sanctions on Syria, saying such measures are tantamount to collective punishment. Scott Bennett is a former U.S. Army psychological warfare officer and joins us now live out of San Francisco. Scott, so do the U.S. or Turkey have a right to be in Syria, and are they playing any positive role in the country?
No, of course not. They're not playing any positive role. It's like a flea or a tick or a parasite creating a positive role on a healthy body. They're agitating, they're inflaming, they're causing the infection of division and hatred and animosity. They're causing all sorts of disruptions and instability. But of course, out of that chaos, quote unquote, they like to institute stability through their United Nations agenda, of course, their economic hijacking of the country and mineral resource theft, like they did to Libya, like they've done to Iraq, like they've done to Afghanistan, and they're trying to do it to Syria. And of course, Israel has backed and provided medical and financial assistance to the terrorists from Saudi Arabia, from Qatar, from Turkey, and killed Russian officers, destroyed Russian planes and helicopters, as well as murdered Syrian children and civilians. This is what the Israeli Zionist Mossad agenda has been done. And Americans like Sheldon Adelson, who is a U.S. multi-billionaire Jewish Zionist tycoon in Las Vegas, Nevada, he is one of the perpetrators of this. A lot of Western Zionists have been siphoning off U.S. dollars, and it's coming out that these wealthy Jewish Zionist Americans have gotten people like Mike Pompeo in their pockets. And Mike Pompeo is the CIA director. Of course, has been involved in the U.S. presence in Syria. He's also been involved in the targeting of WikiLeaks and the attempt to assassinate Julian Assange. So this is a much wider infection of corruption that we're just starting to discover. But the Iranians are very wise to diplomatically expose this and attack it as a war crime, attack it as a crime against humanity, as a crime against children. And only with Iran and Syria and indeed Russia and other neighbors in the community standing together against this Takfiri terrorism can we hope that Syria will be stable.
On that note, Scott, of Takfiri terrorism, if we look at the map of Syria, the northwestern Idlib province, which the Syrian government doesn't have it's not in Syrian government hands, but there are literally every terrorist group has a presence there. and Turkey is against any operations to liberate that area. Why do you think that is, and why is UN humanitarian aid going through that route?
Well, Turkey has been trying to reestablish its Ottoman Empire. It has tried to replace Saudi Arabia as the progenitor of any Sunni Muslim power base. Turkey is a sort of a Switzerland. It plays both sides. It both attacks Russia and then pretends to be a friend. It sends refugees up into Europe and then pretends to be a member of NATO. So I think you'll see Erdogan very quickly dissipating in his power. Indeed, the West tried to assassinate him. The CIA tried to take him out a few years ago, and the Russians rescued him. Why the United Nations is using that area is most likely the U.S. bribery. The U.S. controls and bribes the political figures of the United Nations, so it really is an instrument and a national entity that has no relevance. There has to be a entirely new international body that has relevance, and I think perhaps an international outrage and an international declaration that Israel is indeed creating war crimes and a crime against humanity and a genocide of Syria and the Syrian people, and the United States is participating in that genocide and stealing the natural resources from Syria. Perhaps then the world's humanity will be unified to recognize that this time of an empire-building, out-of-control Western hegemony and a military juggernaut unleashed by Britain and the United States and Israel can no longer be tolerated, or else the entire world will be burned.
Thanks a lot for that, Scott. Scott Bennett there, former U.S. Army psychological warfare officer, joining us live out of San Francisco. Now, Israel is pushing ahead with plans to build over 3,000 settler units in the occupied West Bank. An official with the regime's Ministry for Military Affairs announced the final approval for building 1,800 settler units and preliminary approval for the construction of over 1,300 more units. The Palestinian Liberation Organization condemned Israel's planned settlement expansions in the West Bank, calling it an embodiment of the regime's hostility.
This is a confirmation of the ongoing Israeli aggression and also the inability of the United States to enforce what they sometimes declare. Therefore, the alternative for us as Palestinians is to confirm we continue the joint struggle against the occupation and demand from the world to end the occupation and not to go along with the considerations and demands of Israel and the U.S.
Earlier, Palestinian resistance groups issued a joint statement warning the Israeli regime against pressing ahead with its settlement construction plans. The group stressed that they will not stand idly by in the face of Israel's crimes and desecration of holy sites in the occupied territories. Political commentator and activist Bruce Katz says the U.S. is all talk and no action when it comes to Israel's settlement building activities.
Means absolutely nothing. It's simply more rhetoric, and the same type of rhetoric that we've been hearing for years. Essentially, what is happening is the continuation of the Greater Israel Project, begun in 1948, and this is the de facto dispossession of Palestinian territories piece by piece, with the ultimate objective being a single apartheid state from the Jordan River to the Mediterranean Sea. We know, and we can go back to a statement from Nelson Mandela in, I believe it was in the year 2000, who said that the United States is quite simply not an honest broker in the Middle East.
Welcome back. A new war of words has broken out between France and the UK over fishing rights amid a continued dispute over post-Brexit trade deals. France has threatened the trade disruptions from November 2 if its boats are not granted more access to British waters. French officials say they may carry out systematic customs and sanitary checks on British fish exports and impose a ban on landing the seafood. The UK Brexit minister has called the threats disappointing and disproportionate. David Frost says this is not what Britain would expect from a close ally and partner. London says talks over the issue are moving too slowly and warned it might unilaterally change agreed upon agreements if there's no breakthrough. Now, the UK is home to some of the world's biggest weapons manufacturers, among them Israel's Elbit Systems. Said Bereza has travelled to one of the company's factories in the northwest of England that's facing growing calls to close up shop.
They're small in number, but they have big voices resonating along the streets of Oldham, Manchester, calling for Israeli arms company Elbit Systems to be shut down.
The event here, organized by several pro-Palestinian groups, who accuse Elbit of providing Israel with predatory drones and other military hardware, accusing it of complicity in Israeli war crimes and in abetting Israel in terrorizing the people of Gaza.
Elbit Systems UK, a subsidiary of the Israel-based company of the same name, employs over 500 people and has 10 sites in the UK, including four factories.
Israel is an apartheid state. It's a racist state which is preventing Palestinians from living their ordinary everyday lives. And indeed worse, it's starving them, it's bombing them, it's killing them, it's depriving them of their lands and homes. And it has been since 1948. This factory here, Elbit, is the largest private Israeli arms factory. There's 10 outlets in the UK, and they are all making drones and weapons which go to kill Palestinians.
Apart from supplying Israel with weaponry, Elbit is also a major supplier of sophisticated technology to the British military.
That Britain and Israel have a clear, incestuous, revolving door type of relationship between each of their military establishments and their arms companies. We are fighting back against that here.
In August, pro-Palestine activists took their fight to another level. Direct action against the same site in Oldham, causing disruption to the firm's operations. For their actions, they often face intimidation, arrest, and possible prison time. But they say they're unfazed. Events such as the one today have led to increased public awareness about Elbit and its operations and growing calls for its closure. That, the activists say, is one important step towards a free Palestine. Saeed Pourreza, Manchester.
That brings an end to our bulletin for this hour. Thank you for staying tuned.
This is IRIB English Radio. Iranian news. Iranian culture. Iranian voice. www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Nearly 700 European firms have financial ties worth $255 billion with businesses actively involved in illegal Israeli settlements, according to a new report from civil society. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Jessica Boxbaum, journalist. This article is published under the heading, Report Reveals European Firms have more than $255 billion entwined in illegal Israeli settlements. Stay tuned, please, for the second part of this article. Will Elam United States coordinator of DBIO coalition, noted, despite the illegal nature of Israeli regime settlements under international law, European financial institutions continue to throw a financial lifeline to companies operating in the settlements. European financial institutions should take up their responsibility and follow the example of KLP and GPFG. They should end all investments and financial flows into Israeli settlements and not buy into Israeli regime occupation. Even with these divestment decisions, however, the aforementioned firms still associate with settlement-entwined businesses. KLP is invested in 8 companies involved in the settlement enterprise: Delta Galil Industries, FIBI, Matrix IT, Mavin Group, Rami Levy Chain Stores, Hashikma Marketing 2006, Shapir Engineering and Industry, and Chaparral. GPFG still has business dealings with 34 companies linked to the illegal Israeli settlements. These businesses are ACS Group, Atlas, Copco, Bank Hapoalim, and Bank Leumi. These ongoing financial relationships put into question the firm's commitment to human rights. Maha Abdullah, one of the co-drafters of the report and the International Advocacy Officer at Cairo Institute for Human Rights Studies, told MinPress News that the DBIO's findings definitely contradict the institution's purported ethical responsibilities. Abdullah said, "These companies and financial institutions claim that they are committed to human rights, but then we see the facts on the ground and the level of their involvement in the settlement. So, clearly, these are all in violation of their responsibilities under international law and towards human rights standards." Al-Haq's Khazir speculated, however, that the slow pullout from the settlement enterprise may stem from fears of political backlash. "We saw how the reaction from the Israeli regime towards Ben & Jerry's decision was," Khazir said, adding, "so some companies would be wary of reputational risk and also see divestment as problematic for their shareholders. It's a process of finding the right balance in terms of their gains and their goals." All 50 companies named in the report participate in at least one of the activities listed by the United Nations as criteria for inclusion in its database of companies operating in the illegal Israeli settlements. Of the 50 companies implicated, 15 are American. These businesses are Airbnb, Booking Holdings, Caterpillar, CETCO Mineral Technology Group, Cisco Systems, CNH Industrial, DXC Technology, Energix, Expedia, etc. More than 600,000 Israelis live in settlements across OPT, and 42% of the West Bank is under settlement control. Area C of the West Bank abounds with natural resources, but 68% of this region is reserved for illegal Israeli settlements, while only 1% is designated for Palestinian use. The continuous settler takeover of Palestinian land has prevented Palestinians from developing and utilizing their resources and therefore significantly depleted their economy. Restricted access to Dead Sea quarries and mines has led to an over $1 billion annual loss in revenue for Palestine, according to a 2015 policy brief from Palestinian think tank Al Shabaka. And companies' exploitation of West Bank queries is estimated at $900 million annually. The DBIO report authors write, "The exploitation of natural resources means that the Palestinian people are denied their right to self-determination and permanent sovereignty over their natural resources by profiting from the depletion of Palestinian finite quarry resources. Individual corporate actors may be held criminally liable for complicity in the crimes of appropriation, environmental destruction, and the pillage of natural resources." The EU provided more than $40 million in humanitarian aid to Palestine in 2021. It also follows international law in declaring the Israeli settlements illegal. Yet the EU is the Zionist regime's largest trade partner, with a total of approximately $36 billion in traded goods last year. Hodair said, explaining that the goals of foreign affairs units often clash with human rights entities in the EU. There are conflicting interests even between different European institutions, each with their own priorities. The EU does not support the UN database on companies complicit in the illegal Israeli settlements and continues to block funding to update the resource over budgetary constraints. Yet again, in contradictory fashion, an EU court also ruled in 2019 that consumers have a right to know if products sold in EU markets were made in illegal Israeli settlements. Abdullah said, "On the one hand, the EU has a very consistent approach and position on the illegality of settlements and all the associated violations that come along with it that undermine Palestinian rights. But at the same time, we are seeing that European businesses and financial institutions are still freely and without any consequences are being involved and active with the settlement enterprise." For Abdullah, European business activity in the settlement seems in a strong contrast to the EU's stated allegiances to the Palestinian cause. Abdullah said, "We know what that means in reality. It means giving them an economic lifeline, allowing them to sustain themselves and expand and grow with time, because these settlements, at the end of the day, rely on money in order to prosper and sustain and expand."
Food for thought.
Hello everyone, and let us refresh our minds with a wise statement from the Prophet of Islam to his vicegerent, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him. O Ali, the most favorable deeds to attain the proximity of God are three. The best worshipper is the one who fulfills the obligatory duties of God properly. The most pious of people is the one who abstains from the forbidden matters. And the wealthiest of people is the one who is satisfied with that which God has given. ¶¶
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, Higher Than Favor. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Gratitude is more than mere appreciation by tongue. It includes actions that demonstrate appreciation in practical terms, and it involves using each favor in a proper way. Such gratitude for a favor results in blessings and prosperity far greater than that provided by the favor itself. Using the favors for seeking Allah's pleasure and meeting His servant's needs is a capital that earns honor in this world as well as eternal prosperity in the hereafter. While a favor itself may confer only a material blessing. In other words, when one receives a favor, he receives something useful for this world. And if he shows gratitude for it in appropriate ways, he then receives something additional, which is even better. Additional rewards both for this world and the hereafter. Imam Al-Hadi alayhi salam has said, "One who is grateful for a favor derives more prosperity from his gratefulness than from the favor, because favors pertain to life in this world, whereas gratitude is the capital of this world and the other world." So brothers and sisters, we have to be grateful for all the blessings and all the favors that we receive through whoever it comes. If we are grateful, we benefit more. Welcome back, dear listeners. Today we are discussing something that is higher than a favor. So let's say somebody extends his helping hand to get you out of some sort of trouble, right? You needed help, you know, just take a very simple example. Let's say you needed some money. Somebody gave you some money, right? Your problem got solved. He did a favor to you. Now this favor is to your benefit. There's no doubt about it. You benefited from that favor, got out of that trouble, and you now live a very happy life, and you are all satisfied. Now, the question is, can you benefit from this favor to the next level or not? You can ask, how do I benefit from this favor even further? Well, the answer to that is through thankfulness. You know, sometimes we take things for granted. Somebody helped us, we're like, okay, yeah, I mean, you helped me, fine, whatever, and you move on. But there's another time where you're thankful for that help that you have received, for that assistance you have received. And once you're thankful towards that person, you benefit in the hereafter as well, because Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has created the system based on human beings helping each other out and taking care of each other and thanking each other and being thankful towards each other. Somebody who has thanked another human being has in fact thanked Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So as a return of this thank, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala increases in the sustenance of that person, in the blessings that that person is supposed to receive in this world and in the hereafter. So capitalize on the favors you receive from Allah or from His servants, and you benefit more in this world and the hereafter. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Flocks of sheep are on the streets of Madrid. The animals have made their way through the center of the Spanish capital to follow ancient migration routes. Shepherds accompanied their sheep and goats moving through the streets of the Spanish capital. They actually marked a centuries-old annual tradition that began in 1994. The event allows shepherds to migrate their cattle from summer to winter pastures. They do so based on a deal struck in 1418 that allows the animals to walk through the city freely. The event attracts hundreds of people. It was canceled last year due to the pandemic, but this year, many locals came out to watch.
The Philippines is among the countries facing the soaring plastic waste crisis. However, a group of recyclers are working hard to tackle the problem, turning the waste into building materials. The group is called the Plastic Flamingo, or simply the PLAF. They gather bottles, single-use sachets, and snack food wrappers. The waste is then shredded and molded into post-add planks that can be used for decking and fencing. Their products are also durable enough to make disaster relief shelters and urban furniture. The group says the coronavirus pandemic has worsened the plastic waste problem, sparking a rush for protection equipment. Their disposal is a matter of concern now.
Because of the plastic problem we're currently facing, the pandemic, the huge accumulation of plastic use, there's also improper disposal. People are unaware on, you know, how do I dispose these plastics, where do I dispose of them. So at the same time, we give that avenue also, that instead of putting it in landfills or oceans in general, you know, you give it to the PLAF, you give it to recycling centers like us, and we would recycle these, upcycle them into better products.
The PLAF says surging online shopping is also another problem that they try to address. The group has collected over 100 tons of plastic waste since it started the business in 2019. However, they still have a lot to do. A UN report says some 300 million tons of plastic waste are produced annually, with South Asian countries accounting for 60% of it. North Macedonian zoo has a new inhabitant. It may be small, but it has certainly sparked a big amount of joy. The baby marmoset was born 3 weeks ago. Its parents are super protective of their precious offspring. That's why zoo staff have not been able to get close to the baby and determine if it's a male or a female. The tiny primate will be given a name after its sex is known. Marmosets are the world's smallest monkeys. On average, they are about 13 centimeters long and weigh up to 100 grams. The adorable animals can be found in a number of countries in the Americas.
The hustle and bustle of modern life has made it difficult to communicate with nature the way humans used to do a few decades ago. Now, a giant statue in the state of New York reminds us of the importance of lending an attentive ear to our surroundings. The massive statue named Water's Soul is located along the Hudson River. A woman's head with her index finger pressing on her lips seems she's asking bystanders to maintain silence. It's a work of 66-year-old Spanish artist Juanme Palenza. He says the message of his work is, quote, to call on people to listen to the profound noise of the water talking to us. Water's Soul was made of polyester resin, fiberglass, and marble dust at a Barcelona studio. It was later shipped to its Jersey City site for assembly. The sculpture is 24 meters tall.
You might have heard of Iran's stellar wrestling achievements or about its soccer team, but that's not all. Another sport has grabbed attention too. Golfers now competing during Iran's national golf tournament in Tehran. This year, 90 participants from around the country played on a very unique golf course. It has only 13 holes instead of the standard 18, but that hasn't stopped golf enthusiasts playing the 13 holes and then repeating the last five to complete the tournament. The good news is that the golf course might not stay so small for long. Iran's Golf Federation hopes to bring in more people interested in golf. But for this to happen, the infrastructure must be provided first.
We don't have the space to use the 350 instructors to train the 3,000 registered men and women across the country, so we decided to build a national academy off the golf course. Course number 18 will be used in a competition venue during tournaments and as a training and education venue during non-competition times.
When the course was built decades ago in northern Tehran, it had five more holes. But over the years, fairways were laid across parts of the field, reducing playable footprint. Tehran's golf club has about 300 members, half are women. Golf has been around in Iran for over a century, and most of the courses are in southern provinces. Concerned about endangered animals? If yes, then it will be good news that a Mexican zoo has welcomed a newborn zebra. It belongs to the most threatened of the three species of zebra in the world. The foal made a public appearance Thursday, 10 days after it was born at a zoo in northern Mexico. It's about 50 centimeters tall. Its weight, between 10 to 15 kilograms. The newborn equine raises hopes for the conservation of the imperial zebra species.
We are the only zoo in Mexico that has this species of zebra. Unfortunately, it is an endangered species. Here at the zoo, we are doing everything possible to preserve and produce them so that in the future, we can repopulate some other parks.
The imperial zebra is native to Africa. It is the largest of the wild equids, the family of horses, donkeys, and other animals. Currently, there are less than 2,500 of imperial zebras in the wild. That's blamed on the destruction of their habitat, illegal hunting, and lack of food.
The world's largest Ferris wheel has opened to public in the United Arab Emirates. opened up the Dubai Eye. The wheel takes the visitors to a height of 250 meters. Feast their eyes on the city skyline. That is almost double the height of the iconic London Eye and over 80 meters taller than the high roller in the U.S. city of Las Vegas. Each full rotation of the giant structure takes 38 minutes. The city put on a spectacular firework and light display to celebrate the opening.
The 38th edition of the International Short Film Festival has kicked off in the Iranian capital, with some 63 films from 32 countries competing in the event. The festival has for the first time turned into an Oscar qualifying event, giving winning entries a shot at the Academy Awards. This is being held at Tehran's famous Iran Mall cinema complex, and it will showcase short feature, documentary, and experimental works. 5 Iranian films and 58 from abroad are selected for the grand prize, and the winner will be presented to the Academy for possible Oscar nomination. The jury has members from Iran as well as Italy, Japan, and France. The festival will be running until October 23rd.
Natural disasters often disrupt normal life, but that's not the case with an Indian couple who got married despite their town being submerged by floodwaters. The couple, identified by local media as health workers in Kerala State, managed to reach a temple for the wedding in a giant cooking pot. They could be seen smiling and waving in their ceremonial clothes while two of their relatives were steering the pot. The couple reportedly borrowed the pot from the temple, saying that was the only option available. The pair was unwilling to postpone their big day, adding an unforgettable story to a country that is famous for many incredible things. Feeling down, it's all right to cry and get help. That's all what a place called the Crying Room tries to tell its visitors in Spain. The Crying Room is part of a building located in central Madrid. It's free and open to the public. The Crying Room aims to remove the stigma attached to mental health, crying, and seeking help. It offers a wide range of services, from a corner to crying, to a phone with a list of psychologists people can call. Motivating messages are also visible on the walls. People have hailed the initiative, saying it helps them speak out about their negative emotions.
I think it's an excellent idea to visualize the widespread of the mental health issue. And I think it's a really fun take on it, to call it the crying room, because of the Spanish expression, if you want to cry, go to the crying room. So it's kind of stigmatized to cry in Spain, as in many other countries. So I wanted to take part in this this visualization of the problem.
The Crying Room was opened in an effort to raise awareness about mental health and well-being. Official data in Spain showed that around 40% of people had symptoms of depression last year. Another 30% experienced anxiety.
First movie in orbit in the making. Two Russian nationals who traveled to the International Space Station to shoot scenes of that movie are now back on Earth. The Soyuz MS-18 spacecraft carrying an actress and a film director undocked from the ISS early Sunday and successfully touched down in Kazakhstan about 3 hours later. The film crew, along with a veteran astronaut, blasted off from the Russian leased Baikonur Cosmodrome earlier this month. They spent 12 days in the ISS to shoot the scenes. The mission beats a Hollywood movie project starring Tom Cruise. The mission adds to a long list of firsts for Russia's space industry.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields, like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Fabric cuts used to recreate Vietnamese landscapes. A woman living in the capital, Hanoi, has been doing that for 40 years now. The artist, 61 years old, explains what material she uses to create her artworks.
All the details in my artworks are cut from cloth, which is used for oyai, traditional costume, or cut from silk scarves. These are very small details, and I have to get the whole cloth for oyai. I even have to cut them from beautiful silk scarves sent from my friends abroad.
Tuk says sometimes hundreds of thousands of pieces of cloth are needed to shade the seams. The cuts should be put together very carefully. Besides that, the woman has to work in a room without any air conditioning, even in the boiling summers of Hanoi. That's because, she says, the pieces of cloth are very tiny and would easily be blown away. Her hard work has paid off. The creations sell for up to $5,000. The Vietnamese artist says her work are a summary of the passion and the beauty she has experienced after traveling across her country.
Materials and methods are vital for an artist who combines them to create a masterpiece. Well, a Brazilian artist has used an unusual material to create a huge, dazzling artwork. Mandano has drawn a mural measuring 1,000 square meters using ashes from the burned Amazon rainforest. The artwork on the side of a building in the city of Sao Paulo depicts a firefighter standing near the scenes of deforestation, blazes, and dead animals. Mandano says he traveled extensively to feel that sadness and, more importantly, to collect ashes from him for his paintings. He says his aim is to call attention to the environment in his home country, where thousands of wildfires break out each year.
Be the first to catch the balloon. That's what competitors played to win the title at the first Balloon World Cup in Spain. The competition was held in an amusement park in the northeastern city of Tarragona. Participants had to get the balloon to touch the ground before their opponent could touch it. The event was organized by FC Barcelona player Gerard Piqué and a famous web streamer and commentator.
Get out of your comfort zone and try new things. Today we are very proud to have tried something like that, and that it has worked so well, and that people have enjoyed it. In the end, it's about people having a great time.
The competition was inspired by a trio of American siblings whose balloon game videos had attracted millions of views on TikTok and Instagram. 32 countries competed for the title. An 18-year-old teenager from Peru became the first world champion of this tournament. He defeated his German rival in a 5-minute final match.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Britain's National Health Service could soon be unable to deliver the care it needs to for women giving birth if the surge in COVID cases continues. The president of the Royal College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists has said, The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian's health editor, Andrew Gregory. The piece is titled, NHS Maternity Services Near Breaking Point, Warns Top Doctor. National Health Service could soon be unable to deliver the care it needs to for women giving birth if the surge in COVID cases continues. The president of Britain's Royal College of Obstetricians and Gynaecologists has said. Dr. Edward Morris, Britain's most senior gynaecologist, became the latest high-ranking clinician to raise the alarm about the increasing pressure on the National Health Service. As COVID cases rise and it battles a huge backlog of 5.7 million patients caused by the first and the second wave of the virus. He told The Guardian he was increasingly concerned about the immense pressures facing maternity staff. The latest figures suggest a sharp rise in new cases reported in recent weeks is now having an impact on hospital numbers, with average daily COVID hospital admissions in England at their highest level for nearly 8 months. The latest data shows 39,962 people reporting testing positive for COVID on Sunday, with 328,287 testing positive in the last 7 days, and 949 deaths during the same period. The Chancellor of the Exchequer, Rishi Sunak, on Sunday, 24th of October, publicly ruled out immediately moving to the government's coronavirus Plan B, a suite of light-touch measures such as working from home and compulsory face masks in some settings. The Chancellor said the data did not suggest such a move was necessary, despite reports that Britain's Health Security Agency, UKHSA, was canvassing the level of support among local authorities for the immediate rollout of the winter plan, the clearest sign yet that Whitehall is actively considering additional measures. Dr. Edward Morris said the surge in COVID infections also threatened to derail efforts to tackle a huge backlog in cases of women waiting for gynecological treatment. Senior doctors say operations are already being cancelled in some parts of the country. President of the Royal College of Obstetricians and Gynaecologists, Dr. Edward Morris, raised fears patient safety could be put at risk in maternity wards if the increase in COVID cases and hospitalizations resulted in specialist staff being redeployed to other parts of hospitals, as happened in the first coronavirus wave. The COVID-19 pandemic is far from over, and we're becoming increasingly concerned about the immense pressure facing our maternity staff this winter if the situation continues as it is, he said. We're also aware of the many women and girls who are suffering with gynecological conditions that are currently on extensive waiting lists with no end in sight. With the number of COVID-19 cases rising once more, the National Health Service could soon be in a situation where it is unable to deliver the care it needs to or deal with the huge backlog that has already built up. Dr. Morris added, we know during the first wave of the pandemic, maternity staff were redeployed to different areas of the hospital, and we would urge NHS trusts and boards to avoid this at all costs. Maternity staff could not be replaced by other staff groups due to their